What are your first memories of comics?
Well, my very first memory, and that's actually a pivotal moment, was when my mother gave me Tintin in America, which is sort of like ironic foreshadowing, considering the fact that I did move to America 20 years later. But it was like that moment where I was like 5 years old and I've never seen anything of such sophistication. I mean, Tintin was for a five-year-old that just blew everything away. Of course, as in Europe here, Mickey Mouse was really big. I had a subscription to Mickey Mouse magazine. I got that every week and that was obviously fantastic. And those little pocket books, they're called in German Walt Disney's Lustige Taschenbücher. Those are like little collections, basically. They're put together mostly out of Scandinavian and Italian material. So I used to read that regularly. And then Fix and Foxy, that was like a German, sort of like a Walt Disney knockoff, to say it mildly.
Are the Swiss big comic book readers?
It was fairly common in my school at the time. But you got to remember that when I went to school, that was the heyday of kiosk comics, basically. I mean, you would go, for example, to the newsstand, you would have like dozens and dozens of different comic book series. Also, the situation was such that my parents refused to buy a television, but they didn't have a problem with comics. So they would say, we won't buy a television, but we'll go to the newsstand with you and you can get like 20 Swiss francs worth of stuff. So I would get like, you know, whatever was big at the time. They had Robin Hood comics, they had Western comics, they had the television serial comics like the Be Maya and Pinocchio and all that stuff that was big at the time.
Does it depend a bit on what part of the country you grew up in? I mean, I imagine that maybe the French-speaking part of Switzerland, they've got that relationship with cartoon, Asterix, Tintin. Is there a sort of divide?
Yeah, I mean, Asterix was always big in a German-speaking part too, and so was Lucky Luke and Tintin. However, Asterix never really appealed to me and neither did Lucky Luke. However, you're absolutely correct. You know, the French part, the Swiss Romandie, they're extremely French-centric. I mean, you should consider the fact, too, that the most popular artist in all of France right now is a Swiss. His name is Sepp, and he's got a series called Titeuf. It's an incredible success. It's by far the most successful. They're selling millions of every new one that's coming out. So the French part of Switzerland, I would actually say, is more French than anything else. And we're obviously more German-centric. And the Germans have always been an import country. The Germans have never really produced anything on their own. Mostly, you know, the reason is actually very simple, is that after the Second World War, comics were forbidden. And they've never really recovered from that.
So how did you start drawing then? Your parents, they banned the television, but they were happy to see you scribbling away at the kitchen table.
That's exactly how it happened. So
copying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've bought the comics basically, and I remember there's a pivotal moment. One day I was maybe 6 years old or 7 years old, and I got some kind of, I don't even remember what it was, some kind of nameless Western comic at the time, but it just really appealed to me. And I thought, this is what I want to do. And I went home and I started drawing like insane. And I remember that when I was seven, I drew my first 64-page book. And the interesting thing in hindsight is basically that I didn't just draw the comics aimlessly, but I created my own company as a seven-year-old. So I came up with a name. I put a little seal, you know, like you see like a little seal on top left or at the bottom of the company name. So I already had it all like figured out. Yeah. And when I went to the like high school, college thing, whatever, when I was 14, I actually, that's when we've got the first photocopiers here in Switzerland, like really decent photocopiers. I drew my own comics and sold them to my school friends, and that's actually how I made my first money.
So I guess you would have been a teenager in the mid-80s,
yes,
around then. And that was when Alan Moore's Viva Vendetta came out, when Watchmen came out. Did that genre have a big influence on you?
That is absolutely correct. I was about 18 by the time Watchmen and Dark Knight came out. And that I was actually one of the first people in Switzerland that was doing regular shopping trips in London. And London, actually, at the time, I have to add to, had a tremendous comic book scene. I mean, there was like a lot of independent, there's Tank Girl coming out. There's a lot of exciting kind of counterculture type of stuff that came out of England. And England really was sort of the driving force of innovation at the time. And also in America, there was a big opening, and the Watchmen. I have all the original Watchmen books from 1986. They're probably worth thousands of dollars at this point, the first print runs. And Dark Knight and all that stuff. And that was tremendously influential. And I think to just about everybody of my generation, that changed the ball game.
Were there comic shops in Zurich, for example?
Yes, that was the other big aha moment. That was like when I was about 13 or so, and I went to Zurich because I grew up on the Lake Zurich, on a small town on Lake Zurich. And I had to go through the gymnasium at 13 to the city. And there was a first comic shop that opened up in the early 80s. And I was just buying stuff on a kiosk, whatever there was. And it was mostly crappy stuff, you know. And at some point, 13, 14, I sort of like figured I need to get something better. And I found out about that store. I went there and it was literally El Dorado. I mean, it was just unbelievable. They had graphic novels from all the world. And pretty much all my lunch money went to that stuff. And that's how I found out about a lot of French stuff. I started buying the French heavy metal, you know, Mobius, just all the artsy kind of stuff. And that was really kind of like the beginning where I said, yeah, you know, I want to take my stuff to the next level. And I started actually experimenting more with my own art style, getting more realistic, getting more artsy with it, just getting a little bit away from the funny kind of commercial kind of thing.
And then you went to the States.
I was 24. Initially, what had happened is that I had been publishing my own magazine here. That's just simply the fact that you just could not get distribution if you wanted to self-publish yourself. And at the time, I just wasn't good enough to get in with a big publisher. And Germany was already at the time a very difficult market. And I've gotten very good very quickly. And I sort of hit a wall where I had to say, I just can't get any further without any kind of mentoring or anything. And there was no mentoring here. I was just pretty much on my own. And the United States was very dynamic at the time. There was like these resurgence of comics. I mean, for better or worse, a lot of speculation going on. People buying multiple copies with multiple covers and tucking them away, trying to save up for their kids' college. It's just ludicrous if you really think about it. Anyway, but sales were terrific. I mean, people were selling millions of comics at the time. And it was just a general excitement about everything. I was like, yeah, that's really where it's happening. And I had the opportunity to go to an art school. It's called the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Arts. That's in Dover Rico, New Jersey, I have to say, which is overrun with Mexicans, so it's actually more Mexican than it is American. And my plan was essentially this. I'm going to go there. I'm going to get a student visa. I already had contacts to Marvel, and I'm going to get work there, and I'm going to convert that student visa into a regular working visa, and I'm just going to stay there and do my stuff.
So by this stage, you had a good knowledge of European cartoons. Then you picked up the American style. How about manga, Japanese manga?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because my best friend in my childhood was Japanese, and they would speak Japanese at home, and the mother was very intent that the children actually get some of the Japanese manga heritage. So they always had like Osamu Tezuka books laying around, for example, who is the, you know, godfather basically of Japanese manga. They had this stuff, and I was tremendously influenced by that. I mean, this is like also on German television at the time. There's a lot of Japanese cartoons that were ironically created with German co-productions, and it was a tremendous influence. And I would later on with my wife together do quite a bit of manga work.
How did you get the idea for doing a comic about William Tell?
Well, originally it actually started out that I was still in the States, and it just dawned on me at some point, maybe about 10 years ago, that there really hasn't been any Swiss superheroes. And I don't really know any Swiss artist that would probably be able to do this in a way that a superhero comic really should look. But my initial idea was sort of like a superhero team that would be hiding in the Swiss Alps, which actually we're going to get to in the second Tell book, sort of the Tell Cave, if you want to call it. And then towards the end of my stay in the States, it sort of like dawned on me that all of a sudden, like, you know, I should do something with Tell. Tell would actually probably be the pivotal superhero there would be, you know. But however, 9/11 already had happened. And I've kind of seen what the Americans had done with patriotism, totally disagreeing basically with just anything that happened. And then the financial crisis had happened. And I sort of figured Swiss banks, Tell, patriotism, and sort of like at that moment, it just all kind of came to me.
What did William Tell mean to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, obviously my first real exposure was in gymnasium when we read the book by Schiller, you know, the theater play. And it's sort of that. However, you know, I mean, the way it was written, the book, it wasn't really too accessible to us at that age. You know, I mean, that's one of the things we were kind of struggling with, because we're recounting some of the scenes out of the play. And we were kind of wondering, should we sort of adapt the text from the actual play to make it seem like, to get like the juxtaposition towards the contemporary modern, basically. And then we sort of figured, no, that it's just too extreme. We're going to lose the readers, you know. So we sort of adapted it to a more modern language. I never saw myself as a patriot to begin with, you know. I mean, I always saw myself as a world citizen.
What is your view of patriotism?
Obviously, I think if you read the book, I think it's a control mechanism, basically, to get people to do stuff they otherwise wouldn't do. That's very simple. It's despicable, basically. I mean, I think it's one thing to be proud of your heritage and stuff like that, but to use it to go to war against other people for whatever reason, it's just absolutely, especially what the Americans are doing, is absolutely despicable.
When I was reading your comic, I was reminded a bit of V for Vendetta. There's this controlling party, which in Tell is a sort of thinly veiled, what do you call it? It's like the SVP, like, yeah, the Swiss People's Party.
As a matter of fact, you know, that the main guy in there, his name is Colbert, which is, and of course, if you look it up, it's an anagram for Blocher, and he looks the part too. So it's sort of like that's definitely, I mean, I didn't try to be too terribly clever with those things. You know, the other thing is too that I might add that has really taken people a little bit aback is the fact that Tell, as it turns out at the end of the first book, he's not even a real character. He's a cyborg, essentially. So he's the perfect control unit. So
it's Terminator.
Exactly. It's sort of like a Robocop Terminator type of situation where he's 100% controlled, and it's sort of like over the next two books, he sort of has to find himself because a cyborg is still part human. So he will have to find the patriotic, real human part in himself to find out what this is really about. And eventually he will.
In the old days, you got Superman and Batman, and they're clearly goodies. But then, I suppose, with the Alan Moore type stuff, there's a bit of a moral gray zone. Like, you look at, I don't know, Watchmen. You know, these are meant to be police-type people, but they go around beating people up, shooting people. And who will watch The Watchmen, for example? Exactly. So in this respect, you've modernized it by making, not quite sure where Tell stands morally.
That's absolutely correct. You know, I mean, the British always had this really nice subversive moment in their comics. And of course, if you look at 80s British comics, where Judge Dredd, The Watchmen, all the stuff grew out of, it's the Thatcher era Britain. You know, Alan Moore specifically, I mean, he hated that entire era, basically. It's very important to note that in the first few pages of the Tell comic, when Tell comes on as some kind of a vigilante and sort of really brutally kind of cleans up with that gang, that was absolutely planned. You know, I really wanted to sort of show Tell as a very brutal vigilante kind of hero, so to speak, to also show people that it is not that clear who's really good and who's bad. It's just a matter of who has which motivation, basically, and who drives which motivation. And with Tell, we obviously find out that he is controlled, so he's sort of absolved from certain actions by the end of the first book. And we see that, and we see there's other elements controlling him that is not him.
Is there a moral to the story?
It should be kind of good entertainment, but I'm sure that there is some moral in a sense that we just kind of want to show people how difficult it is to navigate life these days and deal with the messages we're getting. And really the biggest moral is essentially just don't believe everything that the politicians are telling you, that the banks are telling you, and what they're telling you is patriotic and what is not patriotic. And maybe because it's such a grim outlook on the future, that maybe we should look at ourselves because we're damn well heading there. And I mean, we got to be careful. I mean, Switzerland is still, I would have to say, pretty much the best place to be in Europe. I mean, we're still, I would say, living in a little paradise. But the European Union, I mean, you just have to travel around in Europe and see what the rest of Europe looks like. It's not that great either.
How do you describe your style?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Since I'm a man of many hats, I think my style is when I just draw the way I draw. It's sort of like a semi-realistic style that's, of course, influenced by a lot of things. I have the tendency to be a little towards the prettier end of things. I mean, the Tell thing is probably a little uglier than I probably would draw if I just draw away. I mean, with the Tell thing, I really sort of tried to put on my American hat. Mm-hmm. I really wanted it to look like a flawless American comic. I mean, that was really like sort of the idea, and I didn't want it to be too artistic. I mean, I was thinking about it, should I go a little more with Frank Miller? Should I be more artistic with the panel layout? Should I be, you know, just generally, should I just push the boundaries a little? And then I was thinking, no, maybe not for this first series. You know, maybe I should really make it accessible, you know, make the drawings kind of simple. I mean, the drawings in the Tell book are a little simpler than some of the stuff I had done in the 90s, or late 90s, where there's a lot of complex layouts, there's a lot of complex details. I just really wanted to make it accessible, that people can look at it and just see everything in a first look.
If it goes really well, would it be possible to extend it?
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be some kind of a Star Wars ending. If you remember the first Star Wars movie, or was it the third one? I confused it, where they shoot Darth Vader out in space and you think he's just dying in his little capsule. There will obviously, I'm going to leave it somewhat open to the extent that this could be continued. You know, I mean, if this really turns out to be a big success, I will be foolish not to leave myself the opportunity to continue it one way or another. You know, I mean, it's obviously not going to continue right away. There's also the option, you know, and I've been thinking about this and this has been brought to me. I mean, I was just thinking about it. I'm not saying that's what will be, is that we do a true historical comic. I mean, it's one of the things that initially when I thought about the Tell thing, I was kind of like going back and forth and says like how much literature and history should actually be brought in and how much should it be really just a contemporary type of thing. And then I'm thinking about like, well, if people really like the kind of style, I mean, I could just tone the superhero. It doesn't have to be superheroic, but it could be maybe a little more fringe looking or something like that. Just like a really nice comic, like, yeah, just really do essentially an adaptation of the Schiller play.